This is John Beebe, and the title is Further Into Character, Typology. And it was done January 9th, 1999.
The apples is a very strong image, and it's even stronger in the restored print. And when Dorothy comes upon the apple tree, she comes upon it with the extroverted feeling, expectation, that these are going to be delicious apples that are just going to be there for her, like extroverted feeling apples. Oh, apples, she says. And at that point, she meets this extremely grouchy introverted feeling in the apple tree itself. So the apple tree is a very good image of oppositional introverted feeling. The witch is behind this in some way and associated, that she's very much behind the tree, and she's behind this this attack, this oppositional attack on Dorothy. Now, the Scarecrow cleverly manipulates the attack with his thinking, you're right, there's some trickster element in that, and he's able to get the apples. And it's in following up the apples that she comes upon the Tin Woodman. So the Tin Woodman's image appears right in sequence with these strange oppositional apples, you see. And then when you first see the Tin Woodman's face, he looks sullen and glowering in marked contrast to the hopeful optimism of Judy Garland's face. In other words, we get the repeat of the motif of her approaching the apple tree with warm expectation and being met by something coming from another point of view. So that from the beginning of his appearance on the scene, his feeling is somehow opposed to hers. That comes up later when she says, you're as good as new. And he says, if you think I'm as good as new, he immediately comes back with his... So he's very different in his way of presenting his wound and his complaints to her than the Scarecrow, where the Scarecrow presents his problem in a complementary way, and they come together. He's always opposing. When they sing together, a strange thing happens, and I think it's very well done in the film and very correct psychologically. Jack Haley sort of mugs his part in a rather effeminate way so that he actually seems to be competing and a bit scene-stealing next to Dorothy in a way that Ray Bolger never does. Ray Bolger always plays with her and in relation to her. But these two are absolutely competing as they sing. You can see it in his face. Now, all of that makes me feel that he belongs over there in that area of the opposing personality. And if that is the case, we have a chance to learn something about the different character of the contrasexual figure carrying, associated with the animus, as opposed to the contrasexual character associated with the opposing personality. The figure associated with the inferior function is very much like the Scarecrow. It's kind of all over the place. It wants to move and walk, but it falls down as it tries to do so. And it's extremely clumsy. The Scarecrow is a marvelous image of the inferior function. Its intentions are wonderful, but its delivery is very sporadic and flawed, I guess, but there's a better word that I can't find for that. But the Scarecrow is the image of it. It's the image of how, if I think about my inferior sensation function, it's so much like the Scarecrow. It's just so, what it would like to do and what it's able to do are two very different things. It's a well of good intentions and very spotty delivery. By contrast, the problem with the opposing personality is that it becomes rigid. In other words, it's not that it's too flexible and all over the map. It's that it's too rigid. So if we think about the, and it does have a way of rusting up. And interestingly, in a woman, I have found that the opposing personality is often a very good female impersonator. So that I've seen more than one extroverted feeling woman who has a very strong introverted feeling opposing personality who puts on kind of artificial mugging effeminate mannerisms, not unlike the ones that you see in Jack Haley's face in this particular movie, and that it would normally be called an onimus problem. I would call it an opposing personality. I would say that the opposing personality of introverted feeling is operating out of the awareness of the person and taking over the persona and the presentation. So there's a lot to learn by looking at these two functions and thinking about them as, for example, complexes of an actual extroverted feeling woman, complexes that may well be problematic for her. But they are the two companions. The point I'm making is that in the analysis of character, the ego is the heroic superior function is accompanied by these two contrasexual figures, so that you can find in every person you know well, you can find these two contrasexual complexes regularly making their appearance, not just in their dreams, but in their actual behavior in the world. So that when you talk about the character of a person, if when I am trying to understand someone, the very least description that I would give of just about anyone is what their superior function is like, what their opposing personality is like, and what their inferior function is like. I'm sure you've all met my oppositional introverted intuition by now, and I'm sure you've all seen my inferior introverted sensation, and you've all seen my heroic extroverted intuition. You can't talk about me without talking about those three things, at the very least, because one of them alone will not describe the experience you just had with me or how I just operated. They all are working together all the time. And so they create a very interesting story. And these regularly accompany us. Now, the inferior function, animus, tends to be a helpful figure. And it's very clear that the scarecrow is always trying to help. The opposing personality is much more a defensive figure, hence the man who carries the axe. The purpose of the opposing personality is to defend the personality. And it's very clear that where the scarecrow keeps coming up with helpful ideas, the Tin Woodman is there to defend and protect Dorothy. So they have different roles in the psyche. And we need a healthy defense. So that, for instance, I find that when I operate in the world, my introverted intuition often takes a defensive quality. That's how I defend myself, so that I can maintain my own space and so forth. Others of you will defend yourself in different ways. If we go on and look at the other major figures in the film, I think it's pretty clear that Glinda the Good Witch is a figure of introverted intuition. She seems to know things, and she seems to be very comfortable and assured in a helpful way with magical powers. She understands things, and the Cowardly Lion, the third of the companions, seems to me beautifully to belong to the archetype of the Puer Eternus, precisely because he goes through those cycles of inflation and deflation, where he roars and he's the king of the forest and so forth, and then he's crying like a baby when Dorothy slaps him. So it seems to me that he's a perfect example of the Puer Eternus, and I do think his presentation, his abundant hair and his curls and so forth, and his physical presence all speak of extroverted sensation. I believe that the Wicked Witch of the West is in fact in the witch position, and I believe her to be an extroverted intuitive, because if you think about her presentation throughout the film, she's constantly talking about what's going to happen. When I get you, my pretty, it won't be long now. There's always a promise about a terrible future. And so basically her whole capacity is her ability to threaten a dire outcome. And she's also marvelously entertaining and over the top. One of the ways I recognize extroverted intuitives generally is they tend to be entertainers. And extroverted intuitives in your life are constantly coming up with parodies and inventions and artificial voices and gay, and they're always playing that. And shtick is very, very important. And no character in this film has more shtick than the Wicked Witch of the West. It's an amazing performance. So I think that's what extroverted intuition might look like in the witch position. Now Toto is certainly and clearly the trickster, it seems to me. Toto is moving the story. He's sort of the Hermes of the story. He moves the story. He's always the one that, right at the end of, you know, it's he that jumps out of the balloon. He gets in where he doesn't belong. He creates the boundary problem. He creates the whole drama, as a matter of fact, because it's he who bit Elvira Gulch's cat at the beginning. So that I think that the animals are Puer and Trickster. Now, why did I give Toto introverted sensation as his type? This is a technical a term for some of you. The introverted sensation function is one of the least well understood of the psychological functions, and I wish I could teach you all to recognize it. The two functions that are least well understood are introverted feeling and introverted sensation. And I find that I can teach people to recognize and understand introverted feeling with fairly early on in a type lecture, but I find there's a steep learning curve for many people around introverted sensation. Perhaps that's because we're a Jungian group and Jung was an introverted intuitive, and so or perhaps because introverted sensation tends to work behind the scenes and doesn't explain itself, and people often don't understand it. So I can only tell you that what I know most about introverted sensation is that it has an uncanny ability to know what is real that none of the other types have. Introverted intuition is marvelous at developing archetypal fantasy. But it's one thing to develop a mythological model or an archetypal fantasy and knowing exactly what's real and getting behind the scenes to what's really going on. And for that, you need introverted sensation. And I would particularly call your attention to the scene in the movie I don't think most of you would ever forget, that when the wizard is refusing to honor his promise to do something in return for receiving the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West, and all the bluster is going on, it's Toto who runs back, pulls the curtain, and exposes the humbug Then the wizard has to regroup and say, pay no attention to that little man behind the screen. But it's too late. Toto has been the one to unmask this. Toto's a strange little dog. In his book about the film, Salman Rushdie, who wrote a nice essay about The Wizard of Oz for the British Film Institute, talked about the fact that he really couldn't stand Toto. Toto seemed to be a very scruffy little dog indeed. And Toto doesn't have any of the voluptuous, heartwarming qualities of a lassie or something like that. He's in that sense, he's like many introverted sensation types. They often seem to have not enough of a persona. It's not something that they give. They don't care about that so much, so their presentation is often rather plain, and often you feel that the introverted sensation woman could use a trip to the beauty shop, which she'll never make, and she walks around in her chinos and her hair cut short and no makeup and everything very plain, and the introverted sensation man often has a kind of lackluster way of dressing. There's a kind of a so Toto is sort of is like that. He's most undog-like, and usually dogs are either extroverted feelers or extroverted intuitives, and this is neither of those. He's just sort of there. And when something needs to be done, he does it, and he does it in a very interesting way each time. And he's the one, of course, who... And he doesn't move until he needs to move. The rest of the time, he just sits there, and that's typical of introverted sensation. So they don't like to waste energy. It's the function that concerns itself with energy expenditure. In trying to explain the difference between introverted and extroverted sensation, I sometimes say that extroverted sensation is like the French meal. Lots of textures and shapes and savors, and too much. You feel logy and heavy afterward, marvelous as it was, you sort of pay for the experience with liver problems and whatever later, it seems. Whereas introverted sensation is like the Japanese meal. It's just enough. Again, it's all minimal and delicate and a fraction of the cost at every level. And well, if it's done badly. I found that true introverted sensation types don't like too much salt. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't. Yes. John Cusack in The Grifters is a perfect image of introverted sensation. He's our best example of that type, and it's wonderful how few movements he makes and how much happens. And they don't miss a trick. They do not miss a thing. haven't got to it yet. I'm a planter. The types are clear again. And who's the introverted sensation type in that film? Oh. I think he's a good... He seemed right for that. There's a certain plainness to him. I mean, there's a... Great. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I can't tell. He has... You're right. There was a lot of introverted feeling there too. Mitchum is a very interesting character. I would have to go back and decide about that. Very interesting character. He isn't fully what I don't think what we're talking about. But these types are not easily recognized. And I have found over the years, the three types, introverted intuition, introverted feeling, and introverted sensation, can, on quick inspection, all get confused with each other, so that it's not easy. I mean, Cusack is much clearer to me than, and Bogart is much clearer. There's something odd about Mitchum that's a little different from the, and you may, I'm going to see what I think about that. All right. The wizard seems to me pretty clearly extroverted thinking, and I would like to remind you when they say, I think he asked what happened to the witch, so we melted her. And he says, oh, you liquidated her. That blustery use of language is particularly characteristic of extroverted thinking. And particularly in this position of the demonic, the blowhard, you see. In other words, it's kind of a pretentious use of extroverted thinking. And also, extroverted thinking people are supposed to be able to control their movements and things. He can't control the balloon, you see. He promises more than he can deliver. And a real extroverted thinking type with heroic person would always keep their word. But this is demonic. So that kind of gives you the round of all the characters. I had to go through the entire film. Now, once I had that structure, then I could begin to make sense of the story, and that's where I want to kind of finish up, because that's we have about the next half hour to kind of finish up. And this is what I'm really interested in. You have to kind of see the structure of a personality or a situation or a film and how all the elements come together to make up its character to begin then to see what the story is really telling us. You see, that then and only then can we begin to make sense of the movement of the story. So I looked at the film, and I thought about it, and I watched how the presentation, and I decided to just type everything in the film that could possibly be typed that I could think of. And I noticed that the citizens of the Emerald City were very involved with extroverted sensation things like clothes and nail polishing and surfaces and the things that extrovert, and the city itself is filled with extroverted sensation values, and it's green, which is a color associated with extroverted sensation. So that all of that, the emerald. I noticed Uncle Henry's marvelously droll way of handling Elvira Gulch at the beginning, which I can't, where he pretends not to understand her and sort of shrugs marvelously, and I decided that he was an introverted intuitive along with Glinda. And I decided that the Munchkins that were that meet her at the beginning, we want to welcome you to Munchkin Land, and the mayor comes out and so forth. They all seem to have a kind of extroverted thinking ritual that seemed to me to rhyme with the somewhat inflated rhetoric of both Professor Marvel and the Wizard. But then I began to experience some problems because as I looked more closely at the various figures, I discovered an odd thing, which is that the Wicked Witch and Elmira Gulch are not the same type, that there's a definite introverted feeling presentation in the opposing place with Elmira Gulch, but there is a definite, as I said, witchy extroverted intuition. So I discovered that this is a case where the character becomes different in the color sequence and in the fantasy sequence than in the reality frame. I also discovered that with the character of Hickory, who becomes the Tin Woodman. He's quite classically extroverted intuitive in the opening sequence. He starts he strikes a pose in a very entertainerly kind of way and says, you people are going to erect a statue of me someday, and starts talking about what he's going to be in the future. And Aunt Em says, well, don't start posing for it now. And you get none of that behavior later in the Tin Woodman. It's a completely different character. So I thought two characters change their type, which I thought was interesting. But what I really noticed was what an enormous load and weight there was on the opposing personality. Look at the number of characters that I ended up in my obsessional process associating with the introverted feeling. The Witch's Guard, I decided finally that Aunt Em and Elmira Gulch are the same type, that they simply are, one is the negative and one is the positive aspect. And I think it's not unusual for the opposing personality to have this this pair of opposites with it. Do you remember the way the Tin Woodman, when he was dancing, would lean from one side to the other, and they sort of emphasized that? I think there's something in the opposing personality that will go from one side to the other. So I think the opposites of the positive and the negative mother are there. The Grouchy Apple Tree, the Tin Woodman, and the color red, the ruby slippers, I associate with the magical power of introverted feeling. And there, I think, lies in the energy of the opposing personality, really lies the secret of this particular film, or what this particular film is working on. At the beginning of the film, Dorothy, with her extroverted feeling, is quite in opposition to Aunt Em. Aunt Em, with her sense of what's appropriate and what should be done on the farm, wants things done a certain way and in a certain time, and she's sort of maintaining, she has a certain introverted sense of what orderly process is. And Dorothy and Toto and her dramas are entirely in opposition to that. And so you could say that Dorothy is not in touch with in the right kind of relationship to introverted feeling at the beginning of the film. And what happens by the time the film ends is that she has the right kind of connection to introverted feeling. And so she can use the power of the ruby slippers to bring her home. She has made the connection to the opposing personality. And so she suddenly revalues the whole idea of home. Let's look at the last sequence. The final sequence is dear to my heart because all eight psychological types appear on the screen at the same time, if you noticed. And did you notice who answered the question, "Doesn't anybody believe me?" Toto. The introverted sensation function knows what's real. Aunt Em, with her sense of rational order, we dream lots of funny things. Toto understands the reality of the psyche. He knew it was real. That was enough. Now, that moment when Glinda comes and asks her what she's learned, Dorothy makes an extremely complicated statement. And what's exciting about the statement is that the statement has both introverted thinking and introverted feeling embedded in it at the same time, which suggests that she has actually integrated the two sides of her Well, it's that if I ever go looking for my heart's desire, I better not look further than my own backyard, because if it isn't there, I never really lost it anyway. I mean, it's a syllogism in a way, but it's a syllogism that combines qualities of inferior introverted thinking and oppositional introverted feeling. In other words, it's an extremely interesting comment for a child to make. It deeply complicates an original extroverted feeling with all kinds of reflective, soulful. So it's a sign of a lot of inner work to come to a statement like that. It's a little bit like some of the insights that people get in therapy after a long therapy. They're very hard to put into words, but the formula finally comes, and it holds. So she has revalued introverted feeling. She's in a completely different relationship at the end with Aunt Em. And her realization of the power of the ruby slippers particularly. So she's not only established her integrity, but she's gone through quite a set of engagements. Now, as I've been working with trying to make sense of story, I've tried different models. This is one that I developed for a man who's been writing a PhD thesis on baseball movies, in which we went through a series of phases of story to see what the different pieces might be. And this is in effect what we came up with. The first part of the story would represent a kind of rise that Dorothy has at the very beginning, and then her defeat by Elmira Gulch, and then she goes through the regression. She undergoes a kind of initiation under Glinda's tutelage. There's a period of her captivation by the witch. In the end, she redeems her collective home. She makes the sacrifice of leaving Oz. And one could go through this in the classical model of hero, shadow, anima, animus, and self, and go through various phases of the story. That fit the classical model. It was not a model that was particularly suited to my own purposes, because it wasn't linked as closely as I would like to the types. And so I'm going to not linger on that model, but show you this one. It seems to me that what I've been looking at with the various types involves four major points, of which the hero is really only, so to speak, first base. That initial connection with the inferior function, with the anima, animus, that forms the whole work of many stories, seems to me just the first leg in the individuation story as a whole. In other words, you have to understand that different stories go different lengths of their journey. And this particular, for instance, the African Queen essentially starts and stops pretty much with the connection between the heroine and her animus, and the defining line of integrity that they're able to get. So that first piece of story is about connecting with integrity. It's the movie Broadcast News is about the inability of that kind of integrity to be found or achieved in our culture. That first thing is not found. The Wizard of Oz gets that over with relatively early when it brings Dorothy in relation to the Scarecrow. And there's no question about the integrity of the enterprise from that point forward. So the integrity is achieved relatively early in that particular film, and it stays there. That's not what this particular film is working on. Now, once they come together, they have the interesting problem of the wizard who turns out to be a humbug. And so there we have the same archetypal leg of the journey that you see in a film like Beauty and the Beast that I showed at my lecture. There she has to deal with the fact that the wizard is kind and cruel at the same time. he does a dreadful thing. He tells her to get the broom of the Wicked Witch of the West, which is sort of a convenience to him because she probably won't get it, but the witch wants Dorothy anyway, so it's sort of a bad thing. But if she does get it, then he's got the witch out of his hair. But he sort of uses her and really doesn't want to give her anything in return for that, even when she succeeds in bringing it back. So there we get to the point that you're a very bad man once Toto exposes him. And he says, oh, no, I'm not a very bad man. I'm just a very bad wizard. And so this Beauty and the Beast section of the story involves us with the problem of engaging limitation. When I had a very interesting correspondence, James Hillman read an interview I gave about integrity. And he wrote back and he said, all living things are damagers, do damage. And integrity, for me, he says, means carrying that limitation. And when he said that, it had quite an effect on me because he used the word limitation. And when I'd written my book, Integrity in Depth, I had consulted the I Ching before writing the book. And the hexagram that I got to sort of see how it would look at the whole project, the hexagram I got was limitation. Integrity involves taking responsibility for the morally limited person we all are. And so what happens in that sequence with the wizard is they engage the limitation of the demonic figure. But the story does not stop there, because once the wizard's limitation is held, he then proceeds to make everything right, which is what I would call rectifying the ground. You see, he then begins to show that within the limits that all the complexes have, there is enough to do the job. So the Tin Woodman does have a heart, and the Scarecrow does have a brain. The Cowardly Lion does have courage. And although he can't get it there, it finally turns out that Dorothy can get home. So what she ends up doing at the end is that she ends up to have her final statement shows that she has integrated the full journey, because she rectifies the ground. She makes the farm right rather than wrong. In the beginning, she's resisting the farm and her fate of having to live on the farm, and she's longing for the place over the rainbow. At the end, she's saying there's no place like home, and she means it. She makes the ground right. So the last step in the journey is a kind of radical acceptance of one's life and one's fate. And that seems to me very different from heroic mastery, and it feels very different from the usual notions of the hero as somehow redeeming or transforming the collective. Rather, it's much more like a Zen acceptance of things as they really are, taking the created world and accepting it as the only place in which our story can exist. So that the last stage in the story seems to me this process of rectifying the ground. So that's the model that I have finally come up with, both for the archetypal story and maybe for the individuation journey that I think we're all trying to be on, who are part of this. Yes. Disputing with fate. Yes. Well, yes, spirit is a wonderful word. Yes, the opposing personality and the demonic are both a shadow axis. They belong to they're in the realm of the shadow complexes. Each of us have four complexes that are sort of aligned with us. I call them ego-syntonic. Then we have four complexes that we project onto other people that we usually don't like. And then in the course of psychological development, we may get hold of them. Initially, Judy Garland is absolutely opposed to Elmira Gulch and latently to Aunt Em. It isn't as obvious, but she's actually opposed to Aunt Em. It's an authority problem. And so that's shadow. That's all in the area of the shadow. So what we're looking at is a way to get attitude that you take toward your fate is really everything. Individuation is a kind of fate. The self sets a kind of agenda for us, whether we like it or not. And it sets up certain conditions of our lives in which our drama is played. I'm not saying there's no free choice, but as in the hexagram of limitation in the I Ching, it's very clear that the terms and grounds are very clearly laid out. That's why my friend Scott Paul and I found it useful to talk about his thesis about baseball films, because in baseball there's always the game, and the game has its own fixed rules and the metaphor of the game gets the idea of a limited space in which and a limited set of rules in which the individuation is played out. Now, I have found over the years that the single hardest problem in psychotherapy is getting people to accept their fate, that is, to have the right attitude toward the life they in fact have to live. Most people want the conditions different. If my mother had only done this, if my father had only done that, if my husband were only this, if my wife were only this, if my sexuality were only this, if my weight were only that, if my type were only this. I do it, we all do it. I mean, and each of us has a certain fate. So the great gift comes once in a while that there's an infusion of spirit which tells us how to take our lives. And my experience is that the experience of spirit comes through the opposing personality. And it's delivered to us only if we've done the work. At the beginning, we're absolutely at odds with it. So that Elmira Gulch is carrying the value at the beginning that Dorothy absolutely cannot understand. And only at the end is she able to take it up in a positive way. And it's a kind of revaluation of this whole introverted point of view toward home. That to me is so far beyond the hero. One is at that point extremely far from one's original starting point. One is in a completely relativized consciousness in which something that one wanted not at all to do anything with becomes the most essential thing. And that's why I think the ruby slippers were on the witch's shoes. They were on the shoes of the sister of the witch who disappears. I think that's, in other words, Elmira Gulch had the introverted feeling that then transfers to Dorothy, but then she doesn't know what to do with it until she's ready for it. So to me, that's a very powerful thing, and I think that's such a particularly good story because it's such a complete story, because it goes so far. And I think we can begin to assess stories by how far they take us. I think some stories don't go very far, and other stories take us very, very far. Well, I'm sure at this point you have questions and comments, and we could just sort of take the rest of the time on those. Yes. This is always a question that comes up. They certainly are no dummies. I think that's right. They get very. My comparison of filmmaking is to alchemy. You know, the alchemists were in the process of making gold. And in the process of making gold, they had fantasies, and the fantasies had a certain spiritual significance, and the unconscious took a hand in it. So my feeling is that these people are arranging images for the purpose of making money, and occasionally the unconscious takes a hand in it, and so there's this kind of process of construction. And Jung describes that as the transcendent function. And he says that when one is creating the relationship between conscious and unconscious, and people, two things can happen in the process. One can go the way of psychological understanding, or one can go the way of creative elaboration. Now, Alfred Hitchcock always said that what he was always aiming to do was create an emotional effect. So he would work with the images and watch them and contemplate them until they achieved a desired emotional effect. And I guess he also felt, as a commercial filmmaker, that if it had an adequate emotional effect, it would probably be a commercial hit. Now, in fact, The Wizard of Oz didn't go into the black until the late 50s. It was sort of financially marginal. But it's very obvious that they were working to get a certain effect, and they were working with the imagery, and just lots of people came together. Now, what happens then is sort of magical. There's this element of synchronicity in it. So I think conscious and unconscious come together in this process. If something is done well and imagined truly, and it seems to, a certain miracle occasionally occurs with certain pictures. So here we have, one of the interesting things is that you cannot find an auteur to this film. That's right. It was developed, I think it was a novel before it was a stage play, but Baum was often often produced plays based on his, and there was an early musical of The Wizard of Oz. In fact, there was a silent film of The Wizard of Oz in 1925 that Stan Laurel, I think, or no, Oliver Hardy appeared in it, yeah. That's the boundary that she belongs. Well, Salman Rushdie takes a similar tack toward the film. He doesn't agree with I think the movie is about revaluing the introverted feeling and the idea of home. I don't see the home as a place of defense against the world for her. I don't see that. I see Dorothy as naturally endowed with a capacity to move outside of herself. So that I don't think that that's where the Newman is for her, as it might be for someone else. I think for someone else, the Newman would be moving out of the home. I think what she needs to, so she has the extroverted feeling. She needs to get in touch with the introverted feeling. But that's just my instinct about it. So that I believe that she does the thing she needs to do at the end. I think the same thing could be destructive for another person. That is to say, that's a very dangerous ideology for some people. In fact, it's used to clip the wings of people, and they never get out of their small provincial. I mean, that's why Beauty and the Beast is such an important story. I must get out of this small provincial village and expand and move on. Now, the question comes, why this story for America? Well, now, America, this movie was made in 1939, and America is an extroverted thinking country. And America has a problematic extroverted feeling. And now, America was on the verge of becoming the international world power that was about to radically move beyond its own shores to take McDonald's around the world, although we didn't know that at that time. So I think a narrow reading of the film would be that the film supports isolationism. I think a broader reading of the film is that it shows perhaps the importance for the country of staying in touch with its own limit to some degree. In other words, I think it's compensatory to what otherwise might be a kind of a dangerous inflation, which I think we did actually get into as we moved into this. My sense is at the end she's where she needs to be, and that she does affirm the journey she's taken. That it's very important that she consciously disagrees with that M, that the place is real that she's been, and she doesn't dispute that, but she stands with it. So I stand by that interpretation. Yeah.
Were
very painful. I keep getting into that mistake. Well, I think I do think our relation to introverted feeling is not right. I mean, I think we don't have the right relation to introverted feeling. And somehow, the combination of our extroverted feeling and our demonic extroverted, our extroverted thinking and our demonic extroverted feeling gets in there somewhere. I wish our country understood introverted feeling better. I think it would get along with many countries better. It seems like we're always turning some introverted feeling country into a scapegoat because it won't communicate with us the way we want it to. And we had the Soviet Union in that position for a very long time, but we keep using other countries in this way. Keep seeming to miss the point around introverted feeling. I think there's been some definite improvement in that regard under Clinton, as a matter of fact. I think the handling of the Haiti situation was a good example of how introverted feeling might be well handled rather than badly handled. We did not respond to the dictators with righteous indignation, but sent Carter, who made conciliatory statements that enabled them to save face as they left the country and enabled the transition to take place. And I think whenever another approach is tried, I think it often works very well. I wish we could do it with Cuba, for instance. Yes. 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 Right. William Jennings Bryan was the model for the Wizard of Oz in 1898. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The yellow brick road would be the gold standard. Whereas for us, it would be the intuitive path. Well, now, how are we doing for time? We're really over time. So shall we let people go into the day and think about these things? Okay, bye-bye.